Welcome to the Scream Sisters podcast, women who love horror. We're all just misfits and odds. We're running around the city at night, underneath the city lights, oh yeah. Good afternoon, this is Misty from the Scream Sisters. Coming with a show on independent movies. I have Mr. Matt Fisher from Boombastic Films here. We're going to talk about independent movies and the state of it. He's got a really, really exciting list of films that he's done from, it looks like, a very long time. So just say hi, introduce yourself, Matt.
Hello.
Just talk about, you know, how did you get into the business? What made you want to be a filmmaker?
Well, you know, I was always a big fan of films growing up as a kid, such, you know, much like a lot of people, especially filmmakers, you know. And in my teenage years, I kind of went through this, you know, this period of time where I had this real, like, do-it-yourself attitude where it was like, yeah, I wasn't very happy kind of with the things I was seeing on the screen, so, you know, I figured, you know, instead of complaining about it, put my money where my mouth was and step up and start, you know, making my own films. And with technology being what it was at the time, that's what I did. I got myself a camera. I remember I went out, I spent all the money I had, my life savings, on buying a camera. What dedication, huh?
Yeah.
And I gathered up, you know, some friends and family that were more so just wanting to help me. They enjoyed films as well, but, you know, in hindsight, it was more just to kind of help and support me, you know, so I'm forever thankful for those folks. Work with some of them still to this day. But we set out, and on the weekends we would, would write a little short script for a short film or something, and we would go in and would shoot it and, you know, take it home and edit it up and, you know, put in, you know, sound effects and music and all that. And that's one of the things I always tell people that are looking to get into film. I say, you know, the best thing for you to do is, you know, just get a bunch of friends or family or whatever and gather on the weekends and put together these little films. And through doing that, you'll figure out the whole, you know, machinery of making films. You know, you'll get out there, you'll be able to see what it's like dealing with actors, you know what I mean, communicating with crew and cast. You'll be able to see what kind of works, what doesn't work, you know, what takes more time than others, you know what I mean. Stuff like that, you just kind of, it's almost like film school, you know what I mean?
Right.
Which, the advice that I got, you know, when I decided I really wanted to take a run for becoming a filmmaker, and I reached out to some people via the internet that I had respect for as directors, and a lot, you know, asked them for their advice, and a lot of the advice that I got back was, instead of going to film school, just take whatever money you would have put into film school, go out there and make your first film. So that's kind of what I did. And I always felt that, you know, film school's really good for, you know, connections. I think, you know, learning the craft of it is, if you get your hands into it, you know, that's probably your best way to do it. And as far as, like, creative things, you know, as storytelling and stuff like that, I feel like that's just kind of something that, you know, is built into you. Of course, it gets stronger as the muscle of you, you know, doing it gets worked out. But I think that it's kind of the nature of a storyteller is something that's kind of born with somebody. And I just kind of started doing some shorts, and, you know, that eventually led into a feature. I did some music videos and stuff, and led into my first feature, and just kind of went from there.
What was your first feature?
My first feature was a film called Stupaman. It was a mashup between The Toxic Avenger and Taxi Driver. some of my favorite films. We, you know, it's about a character named Alfonso Schmidt, who's this guy who's pushed around. He's kind of the punching bag on society, and one day he, you know, he gets beat up the last time, and he says, I'm not going to take it anymore, and, you know, he actually cries out to God, you know, I grew up in, like, the church, going to church every week, so, like, I felt that was a different twist that I wasn't seeing too often. So he got his powers from God, and God, in a twisted, in the way the vibes I put off, little twisted, you know, twisted things, you know, God gives him the power to go and kill people, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So he takes that power, and he goes, and like the bad guy of the film is a gentleman named Enrique Cobasa, played by Freddie Holbrook. I'd also like to see Jeremy Tyke play Snoopaman. Enrique Cobasa is this pimp drug dealer in the city that, you know, runs drugs and prostitutes and guns and anything bad you can think of. And he, you know, Alfonso, it's just him and his sister, and he's taking care of his sister and Erin, Sherry, played by Erin Sennett. And Enrique has a liking for her, so he kind of takes the sister and tries to make her one of his prostitutes. And, you know, Alfonso has to stand up and go fight him and, you know, get his sister back. That was that. We had Lloyd Kaufman in it, you know, because of the Toxic Avenger influence. I had, you know, Buddha from a hardcore band from Boston, Blood for Blood, which I'm a big fan of. We had Sully from VH1's The White Rapper Show, if you remember that. At the time, that was on the air. That was like a big deal. A country rapper, Insane Shane McCain from New York. He was in the film. But yeah, that was kind of like my film school. When you watch it, it's kind of like a film school. You can tell that it was my film school, you know what I mean? It's a little rough. But yeah, that was my first feature length film. Made with mainly everybody that I just listed were pretty much the only probably professional people in it, and I say that with love. You know, to go back with the Jeremy Tyke thing, I've known Jeremy Tyke, I still work with him to this day. It's funny because I went online and I remember saying, hey, you know, I'm looking for people in the area, I want to make a movie. And I got two responses. One was from Jeremy, the other one was from a dude named Alex Stockwell, not Hawk, which you probably have seen me with numerous times. He's a big part of Boombastic Films.
Oh yeah, I know him.
Actor, producer extraordinaire. Those people came in. I remember Jeremy originally wanted to just write, but he had such a great look for the character that, the lead character of the film that, you know, I talked him into doing that. And, we set our sails and cruised on up into the world of feature films.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote down a bunch of your shorts, like Mr. Shaw and his saw hat, Fair Game, Death of the Deli Man.
Yeah.
And definitely, my favorite with the Tub of Guts. I love that one.
Tub of Guts is a good one, yeah. It's funny, Death of the Deli Man was my first short film. I was working at Stop and Shop at the time.
Yeah.
Over in Abington, Mass. There's a statute of limitations, so I could bring it up. And it's funny because, like, I just went in on my work shift and we shot the movie while it's a short film, of course, but we shot the whole thing while, like, I was on the clock. And you know, there's customers in the background and stuff. It's fun. You know, that's kind of the guerrilla style of doing things, I think, is how everybody usually starts out, you know what I mean? Especially people that really don't have money. Like, we didn't have money. To this day, we still don't really even have money, you know, but we make do. And you just kind of find what you have at your disposal that is good production value that you can kind of build the story around, you know? If you're a mechanic or whatever, you know, write something about the shop that you work in, because you know you can get it, and that's great production value, you know what I mean? So just make use of your resources that you have. That's more advice that I'd give anybody out there trying to, you know, start up and do their first film.
Right. Well, I have two screenplays that I'm working on, so yeah, that's hell good yeah. advice.
good, yeah.
How did you, with the Tub of Guts, I mean, how was that all about?
The Tub of Guts came about because we were, I was doing segments, with a filmmaker out of the UK named Tony Newton, a really good guy, and, I directed a couple of them, and we, I think Tub of Guts was the first one that I didn't direct. I think we had Dave Maggot directed.
Oh, okay.
Dave Maggot directed, I produced it and all that. We had another director, Buddy Buttafuoco, who's kind of in the mix. He did some directing on it as well. But due to the director unions, we let Dave Maggot take the big credit on it, because he was world-renowned for the Groundhog film.
Yes.
Yeah.
Love that movie. I just watched it today. I rewatched it.
Well, thank you.
Well, yeah, it was my research.
Hell yeah. Yeah, I mean, Groundhog came about. I met Dave, like 2014, I think it was. He was somebody on Facebook that was just following the movies and such. And, I was getting ready to do a film called Insomniac, which I think you've seen.
Yes, great movie.
Yeah, and he expressed to me his interest in, you know, wanting to get into the film business. So I told him, I'd tell, you know, all people, you said, I know, you know, we're looking for associate producer credits to help fund the film, where, you know, you sell them for a couple of $100, and then that way whoever looking to get their foot in the door can get a nice, you know, get their first IMDb credit as some type of producer. And he came on and I said, you know, hey, you can just give the money and stay home and watch TV, or you can give the money, you can come on set and work, you know, position and kind of get a feel for it and see what the story was, see what you want, if you like it. And he decided to come on set. So we came on set for a couple films. And I know that at that point he already had, I think, a rough draft of Groundhog. And, you know, I sat down with him and we did, I think, a couple more drafts of it. And, yeah, we set it up to shoot that, I think, in 2016, I think we shot Groundhog, I believe.
Yeah, I think it's dated 2016.
And then 2017, I think.
I have the DVD case right here, but...
Yeah, I think it got released February of 17.
I can't really read it because it's really, really small and I don't have my reading glasses, but...
Oh, no worries. I trust you. I think it was 2017, February, like, 2nd.
I mean, the special effects are really good. Billy Coyne did good, and who was the other person that did the special effects?
Well, you know, it was broken up between, you know, a couple people. I did some effects on it. Billy Coyne did some effects, and Danielle Schneider did some effects on it.
Okay, I don't know her, but...
Yeah, she, yeah,
she must be pretty good.
I believe she still does special effects, but I don't know for sure.
Yeah, well, I especially enjoyed watching Balsamo's lower jaw ripped out.
Yeah, that was a Billy Coyne effect.
Oh, okay, Billy did that. He must have loved it.
Of course, that was a real fun day. I think he even got to, like, direct that scene, if I remember correctly, like some second unit special effects directing. Yeah, that was the great James Balsamo.
I love James Balsamo.
Who doesn't love James Balsamo?
I miss him. I haven't seen him in a long time.
I know. He's a good man. Hopefully he'll come back around with the death of Rocket Shock. Yeah, I know they're trying to do a new one. So hopefully, you know, he'll be coming around for that. You know,
yeah.
He's over in L.A. now, so.
Yeah, I know. Big time man.
He's always been a big time man. He's coming into his own.
But he's so funny.
Love Jimmy.
I've had him on the show. I'll probably try and get him back one day.
Yeah, he'll do it. He's a good guy. understand he's always busy. He pumps out a couple movies a year, I think. They just opened up a new store, too.
Yeah, I saw that.
The Zappers, I think it was.
Yeah. If I ever go to L.A., I'll go see him.
Yeah, me and Alex are supposed to go sometime this coming year. And we definitely plan on stopping in and supporting, picking up some stuff.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, tell me more about Groundhog. Like, what was it like with filming that? I mean, that was...
Groundhog was... Yeah, Groundhog was... We had 8 days to shoot it, you know what I mean? We didn't have a lot of money to shoot it, much like the rest of them, so... You know, whenever you don't have money, and you got a kind of a short schedule, things can get a little, you know, crazy. But for the most part, it was pretty smooth, I felt. It was a lot of fun. All the death scenes and all the gore and stuff.
Really good job for a low budget film.
We try. We aim to please. You know, one of the things we kind of take pride in, I guess you could say, is the fact that, you know, we can kind of head out there because we've been making movies for 50 cents our whole lives. That, like, when we get a little money, you know, we like to think we can stretch it and kind of get the most out of it. You know what I mean? But, the funnest day, I think we killed, like, five people in one day, which was cool. That was good, yeah, so that's always fun. You rolled through a whole bunch of blood, which was always great, you know what I mean? The great Sam Hayes, the first time, I think, we really worked with Sam Hayes, who plays Logan Tanner, a big star of the film. He's great. It's good. It was good to see him, you know. It's about a man kind of breaking, you know what I mean? It really showed he kind of came from the crew world a little bit. Did some shorts himself and did a lot of lighting and stuff. He did lighting for us. And he stepped up and really knocked it out of the park with that role, I thought. We have the great Alex Hawk in there, too. Everybody tells me.
Yes, he's great. Yeah. He's always good.
Yeah, I love seeing him on screen. One of my favorite people to see.
Yeah, he's a nice guy, too.
He is super nice. He's very handsome, too.
Oh, yeah.
Most handsome man I've ever seen in my life. Indeed. Yeah, he's doing big right now, too. He just went over to, last year, he went over to New York, shot a movie, the latest Lloyd Kaufman movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he said Troma's Shitstorm. He went over to Las Vegas. He went to Las Vegas for a movie.
Oh, that's great.
And then he went to California for a movie. So, yeah, I'm real proud of him. He's jumping around doing his thing.
That's great.
Out of Massachusetts, which is a huge thing for anybody, any actors out there that are pursuing, you know, acting. You really got to kind of jump. I know it's kind of, you know, a distance and such, but, you know, you want to be a star everywhere, not just in Massachusetts, you know what I mean? So you gotta do the sacrifices and stuff. I know it's not easy, but you gotta try and find a way to get yourself out of your state. And that's, I guess, any state you live in, you know, and just kind of get out there and work with people and network, and, you know, that's how it is. So, yeah, we're real proud of Alex Hawk doing his thing.
That's
he
great.
Deserves it. He's a good man. He's a great actor. I've known Alex since 2014, 2015, maybe? No, like 2012, actually.
Yeah, okay.
I met him before. I casted him for the feature film DJ Stand the Man.
Yes, I was going to talk about that. I was going to talk about that next, actually.
Tell me
a little bit about that.
Yeah, that was my second feature film. The film came about just at the time. Shortly before that, I was working with a wedding DJ. For like 4 years, I was assisting him, so going to weddings and helping him lug around all his equipment, and I was like the middleman between him and the drunk guests. But yeah, DJ Stand the Man's a film about a DJ that back in the 90s was like a real hotshot DJ. If you were going to go to a club to see a DJ, you were going to see this guy. And jumped to the current time, and he's, you know, kind of down on his luck a little bit. The only DJ he's doing is weddings. So he's dealing with all these, you know, bridezillas and drunk party guests. He's going to crew of misfits that work with them, you know, that are played by, you know, Chase Carson plays DJ Stan the Man. He's got a crew of misfits that, you know, has Alexander Hawk in there, the great Frankie Imbergamo, you know what I mean, Tyler Appel, Eddie Mason, his counterpart and villain is a gentleman named Peter Morris, who's a really cool guy, a super talent. The rest of the cast, this media cast, is rounded off by a John Pierce. And Heidi Rhodes, who resides now in California. That was a real fun movie to do. You know, it had its holdups like most things do when you don't have money. But, we got it to the finish line, and we premiered it, and, you know, it was well-received. And, you know, a lot of people tell me to this day that's my, you know, their favorite film of mine, you know what I mean, which is nice. That Insomniac. Those are the two ones I get the most praise for, I'd say.
It was a really good movie. I mean, it was totally different from what you've done before, but...
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's a nice raunchy comedy, which at this day and age with the PC culture is a little tricky to pull off, you know? And
yeah.
The film came out a little more raunchy than I was expecting. Not too much more, but a little bit more. You know, it's those things when you're shooting a movie, you know, the script has, like, I'm a stickler for having too many swears in a movie, you know what I mean? If we had, like, that bomb, somebody dropping the big fuck bomb in a movie too much, it, like, kind of kills it for me.
Mm-hmm.
So when I wrote the script, I wanted to be very, you know, I kept count of, you know, what, the deal. And with that one, I know that, you know, because you shoot movies out of order, that there was a couple improv F-bombs dropped in there that I wouldn't say it's too much, but, you know, it's a little more than I wanted to have in there, we'll say. But I'm still very happy with it.
Okay.
Funny, I was at a quick funny story about that. I don't know if you ever told, because I was at the premiere for it, and I remember my niece and nephew came to it.
Oh, boy. How old are they?
They were younger. They were, like 7 or 8 at the time.
Oh, jeez.
And every time, like, a bad part would come out, I'd bring them out to the lobby, or I'd bring them out, like, outside to, like, you know, hang out by the street for a little bit for the scene to be over, and then we'd go back in. And it was funny, because I remember when we were out there one time, there was a lady that came out that didn't know that I wrote and directed the film, and she was like, damn. There's a lot of swears in that movie. And I was like, I know, ain't it terrible? And we were talking about, how many swears were in there. It was funny, because, like, I wish I could have seen her face when I got up at the end of the movie to the Q&A, and she was like, oh, that's the guy that wrote all the swears. You know what I mean? So, but yeah, that was fun. That's actually come this year. It's the 5th anniversary of it. We're going to plan some screenings, I think.
Oh, cool.
Bring it back. Yeah.
Wait, how many years?
Five? Five big. Five large.
Okay.
Five, like King Kong Bundy used to do back in the day in the ring. Five. Yeah.
What about Insomnia?
Insomniac is a... That's our latest project that was released. Insomniac was a beautiful thing, you know. A lot of people dug it. I became an award-winning director off of it, which was nice. I recently was put on a list of top 10 directors of 2019 over it, which was, you know, a blessing and an honor. That was great.
That's great.
Yeah, like we were nominated for like 12 awards.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was really good. You know, as a filmmaker, it's nice to kind of be recognized for your work. As you go, you know, go years and years and years of all hard work and hard times and stuff and pushing and pushing and pushing, and, you know, it's just nice to kind of see that other people are really digging it in, you know, the film world.
Yeah, it was very inventive. It was very different, and that's one thing I really enjoy, because in this state of the world with horror movies, I mean, all you get is I'm not going to say all you get, but you get so many freaking reboots, or, you know, either reboots or remakes or whatever the heck you want to call them.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I heard today that they're doing Pumpkinhead, and I'm like, what the fuck? Why can't we have an original movie?
It's weird. Well, it's all because of, you know, the studios are afraid to lose money, you know, so what they want to do is that they know that people like Pumpkinhead, and so they know, hey, well, if we make this, people are going to show up in theaters to see it. It's like a built-in audience.
Yeah, and it's crazy. I mean, not gonna deny, I have seen some good reboots, but like the Evil Dead one was good.
Yeah, great.
But you know, and I've seen some others. I can't think of them right now. But
yeah, The Hills Have Eyes.
The Thing. The Thing. Yep. 1982.
The Thing. I was just gonna bring The Thing up. The Thing is probably the greatest remake of all time.
Yeah. But
still stands up to this day.
Then you had shit like Pet Sematary.
Oh, that was garbage.
Child's Play.
That was like very watered down.
Child's Play, the only redeeming factor was Mark Hamill. And then he started turning into the Joker, like halfway through it.
That's true. Oh, the Child's Play? Remake.
Yeah, the remake. It was interesting, but it's like, my redeeming factor was Mark Hamill, and then it's like, he started turning into the Joker voice halfway through the movie, and it's like, really, Mark? Can you do another voice?
Well, I was surprised he did it, because wasn't that after he resurfaced in the Star Wars movies?
Yeah.
I know when Kevin Smith came around and did the roadshow for the new Jay and Silent Bob reboot movie, he was talking about how they tried to get Hamill into it, and Hamill was like, nah, I can't do it, man. I'm doing the Star Wars movies. So I was surprised that they even got him to be Child's Play. They should have got, you know, Brad Dourif is one of those, the voice of Brad Dourif is so iconic to Chuck. And it's a voiceover, so it's not like he could be 105 years old and he can still do the voice, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know why they don't. I heard Robert Englund is gonna supposed to be playing Freddy again for another Nightmare on Elm Street movie, which would be interesting.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah, I mean, that'll take, because it's you know, it's Robert Englund, and, you know, it won't be a reboot, it'll be a sequel.
I hope his makeup looks better than it did in that Goldbergs episode.
It looked okay, it wasn't great, but...
Yeah, I'm a producer on a documentary with the dude who did the Goldbergs, so I shouldn't be talking smack Olma about the Goldbergs.
Yeah.
The Goldbergs is great.
And you know how to do special effects, so you know more than I do on it.
Yeah, well, the thing with this, like, they're kind of, the Freddy one's, you know, it's an interesting one, because you have the show, which is, the makeup looks real shitty, but I'm sure it was just, you know, the on-set makeup person for, you know, that show who did it, which I guess you can't give too much of a hard time. Then you go back to the reboot of Nightmare on Elm Street, where, I don't know what the hell was on his face, but that was so bad.
Oh, that was horrible.
It took me out of the movie. Like, yeah, if you watch the movie, you watch the reboot, stylistically, it's not that bad of a movie. But he looks so fucking bad in that movie that...
And the actor's not a bad actor. I mean, James Earl Jones. Yeah, I know. He's great.
But it takes you right out of it, you know?
The Friday the 13th reboot wasn't that bad.
Which one?
The Friday the 13th. Yeah, Derek Mears, yeah. He's a good guy.
Another great guy, yeah.
Yeah, I like him.
Great Swamp Thing, too. Did you check out the Swamp Thing show?
Yeah, I saw a couple episodes of it. I have to go back to it.
That was really good. I'm surprised they're not going to spin off and give it a movie or something. Swamp Thing's a movie I don't get big into comic book movies, but if I was ever to do one, Swamp Thing would have been the one I'd want to do.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, they did a couple Swamp Thing movies, but they were kind of bad.
Yeah, Wes Craven did the first one.
He did?
Yeah, Wes Craven did the first Swamp Thing movie. I think Jim Wynorski did the second one, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Okay, I didn't know that.
With Heather Locklear, I think.
Yeah, and I think Adrienne Barbeau was in the first one.
Adrienne Barbeau is in the first one, yeah. I think David Hess is in the first one as well.
Really?
Yeah, Wes Craven, David Hess. He was a good dude. David Hess was one of those cool people that, like, in the early days of Facebook, you could actually reach out to and talk to, which was nice.
I think the only, like, original movies we're seeing now are independent movies.
Yeah, and, it's true. I mean, there's, like, an underground, you know, there's different types of independent. Like, Hollywood would like to say that they're independent, and they make low-budget movies, too, they feel, because it's, like, a badge of honor, but, like, you know, making a $7 million low-budget independent movie isn't quite low-budget independent, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I think the underground has always kind of been where originality was at. Because you have to be, when you don't have the money, you know, to buy big sets or to fix big problems, you got to work around it with just original ideas. And I think that's where it spawns from. But yeah, there's a lot of cool indie films popping off right now, you know, and it has been for a while. They'll probably reboot them soon. They'll probably be rebooted with bigger budgets.
Yeah. Well, then you got people like Adam Green, who is considered indie. Because he...
Adam Green, great dude.
My boyfriend, Adam Green.
Huh?
I said he's my boyfriend.
I remember that, yes. I've seen you two hand-to-hand that I...
Former guest of the show, like, 3 times. Yeah, he is a genius. He really is.
You listen to him and Joe Lynch's podcast?
What?
You listen to his and Joe Lynch's podcast?
Do you know something I don't?
Ah, it's a great podcast.
I have, but...
Yeah.
And I like Joe Lynch, too. Joe Lynch is great. He's a genius, too.
He's a dude who's branching out of horror a little bit. You know, I've come to realize that the way... If you want success...
But he made one of my favorite movies, Night of Badassum.
I love Joe Lynch, but I will say I was not a big fan of Night of Badassum.
Oh, jeez, how? Why?
I don't know. It just,
I used to LARP, so.
Huh?
I used to LARP, so.
Yeah, another director that I don't really dig that other people get upset about. Darren Luz Bousman.
I, like, know him, okay?
Yeah, he did, like, the Genetic Opera movie, which I feel is very overrated.
I actually helped out with their road tour, and I'm friends with the other guy, the guy that wrote it.
Well, and he made the worst remake of all time, which was that Mother's Day remake.
That wasn't that bad.
Yo, I wanted to jump off, like, a high building after watching that. I love the original, the Troma, the Charlie Kaufman Troma Mother's Day is probably one of the best movies Troma's ever released.
Yeah, but you probably haven't seen any of his other movies.
What, like the Saw movies?
No, I don't like the Saw movies.
What else did he do?
He did a movie called Abador, which is about a haunted house. It's a really intense, like, it's not an ordinary haunted house movie.
I'm a sucker for haunted house movies, so I'll have to check it out. Again,
it really is good.
Yeah, I got nothing against him. The movies that I've seen of his thus far don't really, you know.
And St. Agatha, which is, okay, it's not great, but.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
But Abator is really good.
Really? I remember, like, promotion for it, but by that point I was already. Not really looking out for the films, you know what I mean?
I think it's on Netflix.
Ah, well, I have Netflix, so maybe I'll put one and one together and make two, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Wow. That's cool. So how'd you get linked in with that, doing the tour, the press tour?
I just loved the movie, and they were looking for somebody, and I volunteered. I was part of, like, the big fandom that was involved with Repo, and I got to communicate with Darren, and I kept in touch with Darren and Terrence, who's the writer of the movie.
Yeah.
And I've kept in touch with him still, because he has another project now.
Yeah.
But I interviewed Darren and Terrence for a magazine I used to write for. No.
Okay. That makes sense. So you're a big, are you a fan of musicals?
Yes.
What are your top three favorite musical films?
Repo, Rocky Horror. Probably Sweeney Todd.
Really?
Yeah.
I'd have to say, you know, of course, Rocky Horror. Have you ever been to a screening of Rocky Horror where they pop your cherry?
Yeah, I used to be in a cast.
Ah! I went and had my cherry popped at once. The RKO Army thing? Were you a part of that, or?
I know them.
Yeah. I met them years ago.
Yeah, I know the guy that runs it, Roy.
I'm surprised there was no Little Shop of Horrors in there.
My friend, who is sort of a Scream sister,
okay.
Did it. Her cast in Long Island.
Yeah, it's fun. They make it, you know, there's a whole... Are those that they do with... are they one of the groups that will, like, act it out while the movie's playing?
Yeah. That's on my top five. That movie.
Yeah.
They want to remake that too.
Huh?
They want to remake that too.
What, Repo?
No. Little Shop of Horrors.
Oh, of course they do. Well,
with Lady Gaga.
Huh?
With Lady Gaga.
Oh, no.
I love her, but... They don't need to remake that. That movie was perfect.
Yeah, but they will. I mean, that's their... They feel like they're going to put their touch on it. Did you see the Cats movie? That looked like...
I wish I saw that high.
Yeah. Well, I got heroin.
I was sitting there going, what the fuck am I watching?
Taylor Swift is the devil, I feel, so, like... I can't support...
They're now showing at the Somerville Theater, like, audience participation version of Cats.
I'm surprised they don't do free screenings and have, like, homeless people, like, sleeping inside the theater so they can act like it's an audience. And say, hey, look at that sold-out audience, kid. You know?
It was weird.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like the CGI looked like it was kind of on point, but it was like... Man.
And they had, like, an amazing cast, like... Dame Judi Dench and Sir Ian McKellen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Seeing Sir Ian McKellen licking out of a bowl was like the scariest thing I've ever seen in my life.
I believe that. I just recently seen that underwater movie with Kristen Stewart.
Oh, I want to see that.
Yeah, it was good. Like, I'm not a Kristen Stewart fan, and the PG-13 kind of spooked me a little bit, but I'm a sucker for, like, creature movies, and it was good. I must say, it was pretty dang good. Pretty fun.
Is that an independent movie, or is that
big budget?
No,
that was big budget. I mean, okay. I'm sure it was made for a little less than you would think it would be, because it only had, like, maybe five or six actors in it. But, you know, with the underwater thing, and, you know, the CGI, and creating that whole underwater world, I think was... That's where the money went, you know what I mean?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Even just going, just being put in that amount of theaters is a sign of it not being independent. You know, the independent films, usually they'll get there, they'll play in the bigger cities, or if they're lucky enough, they might get like a week. Like Mandy came to my independent local, not my independent, but my local cinema that I would go see, you know, any other mainstream film at. Mm-hmm. Mandy came there. Uncut Gems is there right now, which Uncut Gems is kind of an indie film. It's got Sandler in it, but it's still an indie spirit. The Sadafi brothers are really good. They're really good.
Yeah, that's been playing in the AMC theater by me in Assembly Square.
He should have been nominated. He got snubbed heavy for that. The Sandman got snubbed hard.
I have a question. Is Blumhouse considered an independent?
I don't think so. Okay. People think Blumhouse is, but I don't think they do it. It goes again back to that, you know, you're making a $7-10 million movie. It's not really independent. You know what I mean? It depends on how you feel independent is. Like, there's no really way around it. I don't think it is. You can either do it outside of the studio system, consider that independent, which it wasn't, or like the budget, and they're both probably high. Blumhouse is a company that recently has kind of been disappointing me a little bit. I talked about this the other day with somebody where, you know, Blumhouse, they, you know, they had some fun films like Us, I think they did, you know, Get Out was really good, the Halloween reboot was really good. I mean, it had great directors behind those films, so it's a matter of that. Like, if you can get a good director behind the film, that's the key to the whole thing. But yeah, like, the Black Christmas.
That was awful.
A lot of people were, you know, shitting all over. Another movie that's been rebooted many times, you know, through, I think it's the third time they remade it. Yeah, if I'm going to go see, like, if I'm going to go see, in, like, higher budget indie films like that, I put my money on the A24 films, because they're putting out a lot of really quality psychological horror that is cool. Like, you know, I'm not really disappointed when I go. But Blumhouse kind of seems like a company that came off really strong, and now they're kind of watered down. I almost feel like they're kind of, I don't know, trying to, like, make horror a little bit more politically correct. I'm probably going to get murdered for that one, but I don't know. I feel like they started off strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd rather watch, like, a Ghost House Pictures film from Sam Raimi and, you know, Robert Tapert's company.
Oh, hell yeah.
than a Blumhouse movie. And like I said, A24 is making really good horror movies. Blumhouse, I don't know about Blumhouse, you know. They've had good films in the past, like a handful of good films, but I'm curious to see kind of where they wound up in the next 2 years, like where they'll be at. I'm sure they'll still be going, you know, but.
They make movies for Hulu also, Into the Dark series, and some of them are good, some of them are bad.
Yeah. Well, yeah, everybody's kind of getting into the movie business. You know, Amazon Prime, you know, they're making movies now. YouTube.
There are so many movies on Amazon Prime, and sometimes I find really good ones, sometimes I find total crap. But yeah, they do have, like, a lot of independent movies.
General is, you know, they're not easy to make, but like with the equipment and you know, the digital age has made it a little more easier for people to make films, and it's the cool thing to do, you know what I mean? So like the industry is kind of flooded, like there's no lack of films, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like if you're, you know, if you have your film and you know, you don't want to catch, like, a bad deal where you're getting no money out of it and all that. Like, they can very easily say no to you and just move on to the next person that did something just like it. Or they could take your idea and put up their own little twist on it and make it themselves. At the end of the day, they have all the money and lawyers to do whatever they want to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, there's money, there's movies that come on Netflix, like, every day, and some of them are crap, and some of them are great. Like, perfect example was Terrifier. Was an independent movie, and it's fantastic.
I was a big fan. I'm looking forward to part two.
Yeah. I interviewed David. David was great. I know you met him. Yeah, and you met Damien.
We did the panel with David and Damien. They're really good guys.
Yeah, I didn't get to meet them because I was sick during ScareCon, but yeah, I wish it was there.
you'll be seeing more of them when they come up, you know what I mean?
Hopefully they'll be at ScareCon this year, too.
I think they might. You know, those conventions, you kind of, when a guest comes in, as long as they're cool, they usually get to come back as a family, you know the deal.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, because when I had my podcast, it was me and Jessa Doom, mm-hmm, with David. And we were on our podcast went for like an hour and something, and we were just like BSing like me and you are, and it's like David was like the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah.
He was a sweetheart, and he's like, oh, I want to meet you.
He is a sweetheart. He gets a little little too political sometimes.
Yeah, he's very political. He told me that, and I see from his Facebook. But, like, you know, I correspond with him every now and then, and he'll, like, send me pictures from the set and stuff.
Yeah,
he's been really nice.
With politics, you just got to be careful because you're just singling out an audience. But, you know, he's passionate about it, so, you know, hey, get more power to him.
Yeah, and I agree with him. He's, like, you know, he's, like, negative Trump, and, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll see them this year because they're going to be promoting part two. So, I'm sure they'll be doing the tour. They'll be touring around.
Man, maybe I'll actually get the podcast award that I won.
No, you haven't got it yet?
No.
Everybody that showed up went home empty-handed, and somebody I know didn't show up, and she's still empty-handed. What's going on here? Everybody's empty-handed.
It's like I won it, and they said they were going to mail it to me, like, so many times, and I think they never did.
I'm surprised they didn't mail it out to you.
Nope.
Good folks out there. The Scarecon people were super cool.
Oh, yeah, they're great.
Yeah, they put me on, that 2019, they put me on my first panel. You know, I did their independent directors panel, you know, with Damien, and a gentleman named Garo was really cool. We got to do, you know, the Terrifier panel, me and Mel did, and I got to do the panel for the Phantasm 40th anniversary, which was like a really cool, that was cool.
That's fun. Awesome. Yeah, I interviewed Reggie Bannister.
Reggie Bannister is the man. I remember I met Reggie Bannister like 15 years ago at one of the first Rockin' Shots.
Yeah, he was at Rockin' Chocolate a couple of years ago.
Yeah, he's been there a few times. This was like way back, and I remember ICP was playing. It's funny that night, you know, I went to go see Reggie. And I had a drink with him there, and you know, talked shop for like a half hour or so.
Yeah, he's really nice.
I also seen Kane Hodder there, which was cool, because Kane Hodder's a juggalo, for people who don't know. But,
really?
Yeah, he's a juggalo. You hate him now?
I love Kane. Kane is a sweetheart.
Have you seen his documentary?
No, I have to watch it.
Very good, very good. I worked with Kane Hodder on the Haunted Dallas V, and at the end of the shoot, you know, we went and got a bottle of 1800 tequila, which was his favorite. And, you know, we sat around after just talking about everything, and he got into the whole story about, you know, how he got burnt and stuff. And hearing him tell the story, you know, the moments where it still affects him, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, it makes you get tears in your eyes, because it's such, like, a dramatic story, and he's kind of rose from the ashes, and, like, that a typical person, that would have stopped him. That would have killed their passion for film. That would have been the end of the road. But that wasn't even the beginning of his career. Like, that was before he even got the Jason thing. So, like, it's really inspirational. But I recommend anybody check out the documentary. It's on Amazon Prime, actually, for free.
Yeah, it's on my list.
Yeah, Kane is the man. I love Kane.
The first time I saw him, I was so afraid to talk to him.
He's very intimidating.
He is, but then he was like, hi. I was like,
yeah, he's a sweetheart. He's got a podcast now, too.
Oh, he does?
Yeah, him and Felissa Rose and...
I love Felissa.
Yeah, they do. It's called Casual Mondays, I think.
She keeps... I have to get her on the show. She keeps telling me she will come on the show.
She's very busy.
Yeah. Cool. She does a lot of movies.
Have her on our last episode before the hiatus.
Yeah,
so we're going to try and get her back when we come back.
Cool. So do you have any projects coming up right now?
Right now we're working on a short film. It's clowny, that's all I'll say. I'm kind of keeping a lot of my stuff under wraps from now on, just because, you know, I've noticed, you know, we don't have money and such, you know, it takes a little longer for these projects to get done, and I've come to...
Why don't you do Kickstarter or something like that?
I have no faith in Kickstarter.
Really?
No faith at all. I did an Indiegogo for DJ Stan the Man. I raised, I think, it was $46. And I remember we put together this great video for it, and I was so excited, and I was so hopeful. And I was like, yeah, we're going to make some money to make this movie. It won't be all out of my wallet. And we made $46, and it all came out of my wallet.
Mm.
Okay. So, like, yeah, I tell, you know, you gotta know the audience to push it to, and you gotta have something, I guess, that the people click to, you know? Like, the Terrifier 2, they made, like, $300,000.
Yeah, I know. I contributed, but...
Awesome. Great, yeah. You know, I appreciate you supporting independent film.
But yeah, I couldn't do, like, the prize thingies, because that was too much money.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to... Every little bit helps, you know what I mean? But yeah, I don't support... it's not that I don't support, I just don't put a lot of faith in, like, the crowdfunding stuff, you know what I mean? But, yeah, so now, yeah, my whole new kick thing is, like, I don't like to announce movies too soon, because for previous projects in the past, it'd be... I'd announce it and, you know, put all the promo out for and stuff. And then by the time the movie comes around, it's not really, like, fresh anymore, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I can understand.
The attention span, you know, gets shorter and shorter every second that we're breathing. So I try and I have a new, like, approach to, you know, announcing films and such. But, yeah, we're kind of in post-production right now on a new short, like a 10-15-minute short that... He'll be doing the festivals a little later in the year. He'll probably, you're hearing it here first, kids. It's probably going to open up any of the 5th anniversary screenings of DJ Stand the Man that we do.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so try and, you know, bring it all around. Keep it fun. We like to keep it fun for the audience, you know. Make it more than just a film experience.
I'd like to act in one of yours, maybe.
I'd like to have you in one of my films.
That'd be cool. Great. Yeah,
we got I'm planning on my next feature film for this fall. I'll definitely put you in there.
I still haven't really worked on my screenplay, but I'm trying to get to go to do it.
Push it. Just let it happen. Let it happen organically.
Yeah. I remember you were doing something about Night of the Demons?
Yes. I'm working on a Night of the Demons documentary.
Tell me about it.
Well, the film is all three films. I'm not a director, I'm just like an associate producer on it, so I can't get too deep into it. But the documentary deals with the three, you know, the film and the two sequels and the reboot, based loosely with the reboot. And yeah, we're going around. They did a lot of California interviews, and last I heard there was going to be some New York. There was going to be some New York interviews that I was going to roll out for with them. Chris McGibbon is a local gentleman who's attached to that film in a higher up role than myself. So I think me and him were going to go get some interviews in New York. But as of right now, it's I don't know what's going on with that. But, yeah, it's the same production house that did, like, the RoboCop documentary and the Leviathan documentary for Hellraiser.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I'm also an associate producer on they're doing a Police Academy documentary as well.
Really?
Yeah. So we'll see how those go there. I think Police Academy is coming first, and then after that, I think it's Night of the Demons. Finishing up the Night of the Demons one.
I didn't know there was a Night of the Demons 3.
Yeah, I know. Much like most franchises, they kind of, you know, they slowly go down the slide. But I love the first, the original one, the original Night of the Demons is a masterpiece.
Yes. It's funny. The remake is actually really good on that one.
Is it? I remember seeing pieces of it. I know Eddie Furlong was in it.
Yeah.
The king of it all.
Yeah, and Shannon, what's her name? Shannon Elizabeth.
Elizabeth, yeah, she was in it. It's Angela's character.
Yeah, she was Angela, yeah. I like her. She's good.
Yeah, 2 and 3 are pretty good. Like, you know, I think you can get 2 and 3 on Blu-ray now. They were hard to get for a while. But yeah, the first one, if anybody's never seen that first one, I definitely recommend it.
I've watched that tons of times.
I have so many copies of that movie. I'm looking at a poster.
I don't actually have it. I have to get it.
The artwork, it's funny. That movie, when I was a kid, I was always too scared to rent it because the cover is so
Really?
Oh, yeah, her, like, on the cover with the invitation, like, the demon look, that demon look was horrifying. And then, like I said before, I came from, like, a religious house, you know what I mean? So, like, so those devil movies and those demon movies are a little more scarier to me, because I actually believe that they're real, you know what I mean?
Mm.
It's a different realm, you know? Going back to Insomniac, look at this jumping back and forth in time. The thing with Insomniac that I when I do a horror thing, I kind of like to put, you know, more realistic tones in it, you know what I mean? To kind of tie into the whole demon thing, where how I feel they're real and, like, how they're scary. That's why they're scary, you know? And with the Insomniac thing, you know, I've had insomnia for, you know, a good chunk of my life. I also want to shout out the great Ray Booten. Is in Star of Insomniac, Alexander Hawks in there.
He was really good, Ray Booten.
Yep, Ray Booten's the man. I was with him yesterday. I got a podcast with him called Mostly Ghostly, where we talk about...
All right, I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet.
Listen there waiting for you, baby, whenever you're ready.
I don't listen to a lot of podcasts, honestly.
I do an overnight job, so that's why I listen to
Oh, okay. Podcasts. Well, I don't work, so...
Well, hey. With you on that. I'm working my way towards but Sabrina Dennison is an Insomniac as well. I wanted to shout her out. She was at Alma in Alejandro Jodorowsky's Santa Sangre, which is a beautiful art house film. If anybody hasn't seen it, go check it out. It's fantastical.
What is it?
It's beautiful. Great. You'd have to buy it. I don't think it's on any streaming platforms. It's called Santa Sangre. I'll send you a link.
Okay.
Beautiful. It's like very art house and like, it's a wild movie. It's like one of the, from the guy who did El Topo and The Holy Mountain, which are other like trippy, you know, head movies. They're like movies on acid kind of, but they're really cool. I always like to shout out Sabrina. She's super cool. I met her on the set of The House Across the Street, the director of it, because Sabrina's deaf, and the director of House Across the Street, also the director of Mr. Sharnasaw, which you talked about earlier, met her through him on that set, which was cool. Support the deaf. It's good. Hire cast, deaf cast and crew. Come across them because they love making movies, and sometimes they don't get the jobs because people think that they can't handle it because they're deaf, but they know what they're doing, and they're hard workers, and they're doing a bit. Hell yeah.
You sound very passionate.
I love it. I love it. You gotta love it. There's no money in it. You gotta do it for the passion.
Yep.
That's the people think they're gonna get rich. It's funny, you meet somebody, they think they're gonna make a short film and then they're gonna be, you know, directed and fucking.
That's why I do my podcast. I love it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You know, there's so many of it that you gotta love it. Like, you know, the unfortunate truth of it is that you gotta do it to love it, you know what I mean? And if you happen to make money or get anything out of it, that's just a plus. But you gotta really love what you're doing.
Yep. I've gotten a chance to meet great people doing it.
Of course. You know, that's why I tell people all the time.
I mean, I got to be friendly with Bill Moseley.
Bill Moseley's a good dude.
Yeah, he's...
Well, with the films, I tell people all the time, I said, we don't get in money, we get in, like, you know, cool points, where, like, yeah, we're not being paid, but you get to meet these people that you grew up loving, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Work with them or get to know them, and you know, that's the cool thing. Like, when I don't have any money, I can say, you know, the things that I've accomplished, you know, I'm proud of, and you know, that's worth getting more than money at the end of the day, I feel, because when you're dead, when you take that big dirt nap, you can't take the money with you, but you can take that joy of knowing did what you wanted to do and loved, and you got to work with people that you really appreciate, and they appreciate you, and it's just, you know, that's the rewards, I think, and the things that we do, be it filmmaking or podcasting, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
Hell yeah. We got to get you on our podcast.
Yeah.
I do three of them. I do the Mostly Ghostly Show with Ray Boone, and I do Boombastic Cast with Alexander Hawk. Both of them can be found on the Boombastic Media YouTube page. And I do a show called Shock Treatment with Mel and Maddie with Melissa Potter, which is supposed to be on the Dorkening Network, but we gotta get back into it and do some new episodes.
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes.
Well, I'm about to pick up a second one and a third one, so.
They're great. Podcasts are so cool because you sit down, you have a conversation, and you record it.
Yeah. I'd love to talk, so.
Exactly.
Alright, well, I know you had some place to go.
Well, yeah, I'm a very busy individual.
I'm not, but that's okay. No, I'm hungry.
I'm good. Well, my busy thing is going grocery shopping. That's my Thursday night chore. But, very exciting stuff. But, hey, it's been good. This show's been a long time coming. I appreciate you having me on. I love the show. And, yeah, thank you. It was a good time.
Yeah, it was. And you're a good guy. You're my bud.
Yeah.
We should hang. I said we should hang.
Hell yeah, let me know. We'll do it up. I'll put you in a movie. I'll get your actress on, you know what I mean? Do some acting.
Yeah, I did some acting in college, so.
I said everybody acts every day of their life, whether they're at a family party and they don't want to talk to a certain person that they pretend they like, or they're at work and they're talking to a customer that they don't want to be talking to, or going to a store and dealing with people. Everybody acts every day of their life. I was told that when I did Superman, Insane Shane McCain told me that. It always stuck with me. Because he was a great actor, and like I'm dealing with friends and family that not exactly the best actors, you know what I mean? And I remember being like, wow, man, you're really good. And he was like, yeah, and he gave me the whole spiel. He's like, you know, everybody acts every day of their life. They don't even realize it. That was profound.
Yep.
And I said, wow, you're dead on with that. Yeah.
I used to work for Comcast. I know how to act.
Hell yeah.
Just that people yell at me every day for 11 years.
I know. It's terrible how cruel people can be to each other, you know what I mean?
Alright, so where can we find you at the net?
On the net, well, if you're looking for, I'm on the Facebook under Matthew Fisher, Matthew with one T. We got Boombastic, Boombastic Films. That's on, you can catch us. We're on Facebook, Twitter, just started Instagram, and we have a YouTube page at Boombastic Media.
Oh, you do? Okay, cool.
Yeah, that's our YouTube page. We got on there, we have all our trailers and interviews and, you know, miscellaneous film stuff, and that's where the Boombastic Cast episodes pop up, and that's where the Mostly Ghostly episodes pop up.
Okay, so if somebody wants to buy your films, where do they do that?
If somebody wants to buy our films, I mean, we have an eBay page. They can look up any of the things on eBay, or they can contact us directly, like on the Facebook page. And, you know, we get a PayPal and stuff, so we can do that and send it out, you know, which we've sent out DVDs all over the world. So if you're living under an igloo in Alaska, we get you a movie, you know what I mean? It is very possible. So reach out. And we love our fans, so... You know, reach out, we'll probably send you some free stuff with the movie.
Uh-oh, we have a new Scream Sister over here.
Oh, yeah? Is it a feline?
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
Her name is Widow.
Tell her I said hello.
Ow! Stop scratching the chair, cat! Crazy.
Were you at the Horrorween when we showed the Paws movie?
The which one?
The Paws with the giant cat.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's a little cat.
Yeah. trying to kick Halloween off again this year, too.
Oh, good, good, good,
yeah,
good.
Yeah, that was fun. It was good to get people. We didn't get a gigantic turnout, you know, but it was good to... It's good to get together on Halloween with like-minded folks who watch.
Halloween's on a Saturday this year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, that's the perfect time to do it, then. I'm sure everybody's been doing it. So now we gotta compete with the Halloween party, so that's the tricky part.
Yeah, I want to see if I can dress up this year.
You have to dress up every day. You don't need Halloween to dress up.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I had pink and purple hair, so yeah, I dress up.
Love it.
You saw my new hair?
Yeah, I wish I had purple hair. It's funny, I always tell people and they laugh at me, there's like a hairstyle that the ladies are doing nowadays where it's like a white with like different colors in it. And it looks so great, I almost want to do it to my hair, even though it's a girl's hair color style. But it's like, it looks so cool. I haven't dyed my hair in a while. I used to dye it. Whenever I do a different cameo, I dye my hair a different color. In Groundhog, I am black.
That's cool.
Mine's
half pink, half purple.
Yeah, I like that. Is it on each side, or is it like a mix?
On each black side.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. All right, so we know where to find you.
Sure do.
So, I'm going to be signing off.
Alrighty. Well, again, it was a pleasure. I thank you for having me.
No problem. My pleasure. So, everybody check out Boombastic Films. And this is Misty signing off with the Scream Sisters. We'll probably have a new show in a couple weeks. I've been dying to talk about reboots, and I think we're going to do a show on it.
Again, it was a lot of fun. I'm down.
Okay, no problem. All right. Good night.
Thank you. Good night.